How will data centers and energy infrastructure shape the future of where we live? That was the topic of a panel discussion in May titled People, Place, and Power at Thrive Regional Partnerships, Yes and Spring Forum on Thoughtfully Preparing Communities for Energy and AI, presented by the Lyndhurst Foundation at the Tennessee Aquarium here in Chattanooga. The nonprofit Thrive serves 16 counties where Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia meet, including the greater Chattanooga area. The participants on this panel: the moderator, Dodd Galbraith, founding director of Lipscomb University's Institute for Sustainable Practice in Nashville; Hunter Hydus, director of system planning at Tennessee Valley Authority; Lee Hopkins, assistant director of the Center of Economic Development and Research at Georgia Tech; Peter Hubbard, commissioner on the Georgia Public Service Commission; and Stacy Funderburk, vice president of the Central Southeast Region and Georgia and Alabama state director for the Conservation Fund.
So I call this our leaders and experts panel. They're focusing on people, place, and power. First, we have Commissioner Peter Hubbard, who serves on the Georgia Public Service Commission. His hometown is originally in Cleveland, Tennessee. He was elected to the commission in 2025. He has 16 years of energy experience in developing solar and battery storage projects, prepared electric utility integrated resource plans. He's run electricity and gas modeling, performed organized market analysis for all of North America, projected fuel prices, analyzed project risk, conducted M&A due diligence, and navigated electric grid connections and more. But the thing that I found most interesting about him is his heart. He founded the nonprofit Georgia Center for Energy Solutions to advocate for clean energy and lower electric bills for all of us, particularly Georgians. And we'll hold applause at the end, please. Next is Hunter Hydus. Hunter works with Tennessee Valley Authority. He's born and raised right here in Chattanooga. He's the director of system planning at Tennessee Valley Authority, responsible for long-term capacity and generation planning, including TVA's integrated resource plan. He spent his entire career at TVA, starting as an environmental research intern in 2009. He's held various roles leading business units responsible for environmental policy, business development, economic analysis for capital projects, and portfolio risk management. Our next leader is Lee Hopkins with the Center for Economic Development Research at Georgia Tech. Lee is originally from Decatur, Georgia. You hear all these hometowns in our region. She's assistant director there, but she's also been a planner specializing in economic community development with over 20 years of experience. Her current mission is to empower communities to create a competitive workforce pipeline, enabling sustainable development strategies, foster innovation and entrepreneurship. She also served as a senior planner in the city of Atlanta, my hometown. She's extremely well-versed in economic and community development, strategic planning, workforce development, ArcGIS analysis, zoning and development regulations, and environmental requirements for infrastructure projects. Very relevant. She is also originally trained as a forester at the University of Georgia. Go Dogs. All right. Last but not least, we have Stacy Funderburk. Stacy is with the Conservation Fund. His original home is in Milledgeville, Georgia. He was vice president of the Central Southeast Region for Georgia and Alabama. He previously served as state director. A person I really love and admire named Rex Boner hired him in his first job. Rex is retired from them now. Many of you may know him or remember him. Stacy began his career with the Conservation Fund in 2009 as a regional counsel and a real estate associate. So he knows a lot about the land debate, the real estate debate. So he started out as an attorney in securities and finance, trained at the alma mater of Robert F. Kennedy Sr. at the University of Virginia. So please give a rounding, loving applause for our expert panel. I think just about everybody but Stacy is going to be able to stick around for a big part of the afternoon, so you'll be able to ask questions of them now that you know them better. So let me do one other thing that kind of harkens the way we were introduced. I want to remind you of kind of our focus today. The mission of Thrive is to make the most of economic opportunities while preserving what we love about our home communities. Further, today, since we've convened mostly leaders and practitioners from the tri-state, we're going to focus on our shared interests, our mutual interests. We're not really going to broaden our scope to have a discussion about federal policy dynamics, but we're going to try to focus on keeping the conversation local and regional. Okay, so let's get started. All right, let's begin with Commissioner Hubbard. Commissioner Hubbard, you have a very unique view from the Georgia Public Service Commission, and you possess a deep energy background and experience. What are your primary takeaways from Celine's presentation about the clear and present local data center and AI data center development interests in our shared region?
Thank you for that question, everyone. Again, I'm Peter Hubbard, and thank you as well, Celine, for that presentation, especially focused on water. And, I've done a number of data center town halls, and there are a lot of concerns that people express, and I think my mission is to get out there and help provide information to folks so that they can make an informed decision. And water is a critical part of that. And I'm really glad, actually, Celine, that you mentioned that it's not just the water that a data center consumes and the ways to reduce that, but we also have to think about the indirect effects. And so I'm thinking about thermal generation and the water use that's used indirectly to power that data center as well. And that's the kind of holistic thinking that we need to be thinking about when we're trying to come up with the right solutions for data centers. So I think that's kind of where I come down. There's also a lot of other critical issues around power, and that's really my bailiwick as a public service commissioner. We regulate how much you pay on your power bill and where that power comes from, and whether it's a really tough question to answer, but whether data centers are paying their fair share. So I guess my takeaway from that presentation is that we really need to think deeply to come up with the right solutions and putting on our thinking caps and doing this on the front end and being proactive rather than reactive is always going to have a better result than trying to engineer it on the back end.
Excellent. And I'll add, too, I'm going to out myself. I worked on two Tennessee pieces of legislation that dealt with water, the Interbasin Water Transfer Act and the Water Information Act 2000-2002, respectively. And our primary concern in passing those laws was not just Atlanta's growing need for water and their scarcity, it was drought. We were concerned about floating barges, we were concerned about nuclear power plants being able to put hot water in the Tennessee River or semi-hot water in the Tennessee River. And we know in the past we've actually had to release surges of water from Norris Dam down the river to cool the river so those dams could continue to operate. And many of you may have heard about Corpus Christi, Texas, that's within 180 days of running out of water, the first American city to do that if that happens. So water's a big deal, and the commissioner hit that right on the head. All right, so let's turn to our panel and let's get deeper. Hunter, what steps are our region's energy sector taking, both TVA and local utilities, to plan and act for the long term, giving kind of the unknowns that we're going to be dealing with?
Yeah, it's a great question. And thanks for the invite. Glad to be here. So I'll just give a little bit of overview of TVA, if that's helpful. So TVA serves a 7-state region. We are the wholesale power provider for that 7 states. We have 153 local power companies that are distributors of that power to the end-use customer. And so I think about data centers specifically as a forecasting challenge. So as you think about kind of the situation we're in today, a national energy emergency, capacity constrained, so there are trade-offs in any load that we are bringing onto the system. And so as part of our mission at TVA, it's energy, environment, economic development. So we hold those things as dear to us, but they're also often in tension with one another. So if you think about those three things, the energy portion of that, we want to provide reliable energy to the customers that we serve, but also at an affordable rate. And so I juxtapose that with economic development, right? We want to support economic development in the 7-state region, but also thinking about how that impacts all ratepayers when we're supporting economic development. So data centers specifically is not necessarily an industry that we have had to target for economic development. They are coming at us very quickly. And so the conversation earlier from Celine about trade-offs. So, you know, you've seen, I know we're not going to get into federal policy, but if you think about the ratepayer protection pledge that was issued by the White House, so data centers paying their fair share of their impact to their region that they're going to locate in and making sure that ratepayers are protected from that standpoint. And you've also seen a lot of activity in state legislatures that are mirroring that type of environment where they want data centers that are coming to make sure that they are not impacting all ratepayers. So as we think about developing a load forecast for the 7-state region, there's a lot of uncertainty in how quickly these data centers locate and how large they are. So traditional economic development at TVA has been, we have conversations with a prospective customer, and just take an auto manufacturer as an example. They come in, they want to have a conversation. They may have a few sites they're looking at, but they have a plan over the next 5 years or so to build a facility, hire a workforce, get their supply chain in order for that particular location. With data centers, it's very different. So they come, they may already have a site in mind. They may have already acquired the site. They're looking for, how quickly can I get power? How quickly can I get water? Do I have transmission infrastructure for that? So it's a big planning uncertainty challenge in the timing and the magnitude of that, but also the cost of these data centers. And so we're making sure as TVA that we are protecting ratepayers, not just our direct serve customers, but also customers of our local power companies, to make sure those data centers are paying for their fair impact.
Commissioner Hubbard, is there anything that the Georgia Public Service Commission maybe is approaching differently other than what Hunter just described?
No, I think we're largely, and I should say that all 50 states are dealing in some form or another with data centers and really grappling with that question of how much should a large load customer pay on their tariff. And in Georgia, we put some guardrails up, longer contract terms, some minimum monthly charges, early termination fees, and a parent guarantee as well. But there are, and those are the obvious ones. I do still have some lingering concerns around things like extending certain power plants, and there's different ways to account for whether or not they're paying their fair share. But I think we've done a pretty good job in Georgia, but there's always more work to be done.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, let's turn to Lee. Lee, what are the economic implications for preparing our region's workforce, maybe even for preparing skills among local leaders as well, for the data center development side, the related manufacturing supply chains, the construction of these sites, future operational and support skills? How should our educational and private training associations respond, or how are you all responding right now because of the current interest?
Yeah, so I think we have a real opportunity here now. We're seeing so much data center development. I think we have to start thinking about how to translate these investments into our workforce development initiatives, and not only, think about those construction jobs, but also think about translating these to permanent high-paying jobs. And so, now with so much of this data center development, along comes with it AI and, more manufacturers using AI and thinking about how to sort of raise the entire skill set of our workforce. So we have, kind of a tricky situation, right? So we've got digital natives like my kids, probably, a lot of everybody's kids in the room are growing up with, with AI, and they're going to be digital natives and going to be thinking completely different than, I thought when, I was a kid. And so our jobs are just going to be constantly changing. So we also have to be thinking about how to educate in a way that allows a student or a worker to be very flexible with their careers and how they approach their work in the future. So, leading with curiosity and creativity is going to be super important. And, I would also say that we're going to have to sell ourselves. So no longer is your previous experience or your degree. My forestry degree certainly didn't get me here.
didn't hurt.
But no longer are those things going to be, your pedigree. We're going to be thinking about who are you and what are the unique skill sets that a person can bring to their career. And again, I'm going to just harp on leading with curiosity and creativity and marketing you yourself as the future of the workforce. That is what's going to set people apart. And I think that's where schools and workforce development programs need to be thinking about being creative, nimble, flexible with how to bring that out.
Excellent. All right, so we've kind of touched on energy and people, and now let's kind of focus on place. Thank you, Rhett, wherever you are, all right, for that theme. Stacy, what challenges do conservationists want us to process and understand in terms of what we all love and enjoy, from our majestic landscapes to our crystal waterways and our vibrant wildlife? If you detect any bias in what I just said, what should be our biggest priorities? We heard about evaporative capacity affecting water. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Happy to be here. And I'm lucky to work for the Conservation Fund. You know, we have a dual mission, actually, that is land and water conservation and sustainable economic development. Of course, when we start talking about data centers and this type of conversation, it is really fraught in so many ways. And I was listening to Celine's talk earlier, and one of the things that I think is really important is comparing how we think about our natural resources, especially at a regional level, especially in a place as special as this area, and the local decision making that is determining how these projects carry forward. So how many of, I mean, most of these conversations are happening at a local level and decisions are being made around a relatively short-term economic gain, right? Well, how many of you are aware of a river that lives inside one county? Anybody? How about a large forest that provides habitat for endangered species and other things? Same thing. I think one of the really difficult things is the speed at which these decisions are happening, and how do you plan at a regional level and get ahead of those and roll up the impacts across multiple data centers, across multiple counties? We know that there are huge water impacts, right? We've done a lot of work in the Flint River, which is the reverse of all rivers. It doesn't start in some beautiful mountain stream and end up in the city. It starts under the world's largest airport and then finds its way into a beautiful river that ultimately flows into the ocean. There are data centers being proposed at the headwaters of the Flint that runs dry in times of drought. And guess what is happening in Georgia again for the first time in about 12 years, a drought. So there's water challenges, there's land use challenges, which we'll likely get into a little bit more. I spend most of my days out negotiating to buy land for long-term conservation. When a data center or any type of development, it's not just the footprint of that itself, it's all of the amenities that have to be hooked into that, right? Transmission that gets power to that site, which is often linear and long distance. It's also the thing that does to prices nearby. If you want to add a park next door, the price likely just went up by $10,000 an acre or more, and expectations of that. So land use is definitely a big part of that. And I think there are a lot of challenges. It doesn't mean we can't have data centers, but I think it's really important for us to think about it in three different ways. One is on the front end, like the planning, the strategic planning around where they're located, how they're built, and what their impact is, and how you really think about the long-term impact of those. There is what is the funding that comes from comes in on the front end for a major investment that is offsetting those impacts over the long term and benefiting the community. And then also for the county or the municipality that is getting, for many, the biggest increase in tax revenues that they've seen ever, how are they going to spend that money? Are they also going to spend that money to offset those impacts or enhance our natural resources and all the things that make this a special place to live? So I think those are things we need to be thinking about going into these conversations.
All right, Commissioner Hubbard, because of your broad perspective, we want to ask you, how do you see us balancing all of this kind of big picture? What do you think we should be conveying to state leaders and local leaders in terms of marrying all these three kind of high-level perspectives each of our panelists just addressed?
Summarize a couple of things that have already been said. The idea of rolling up all of the different impacts and having that big picture view, that's where whole of government really helps, the state level in particular. But I also think I mentioned I like to give information out. It's really helpful. We've got someone here from Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech has a great local data center ordinance toolkit, for example, that you can use to empower local leaders to get ahead of the curve and understand with the good, the bad, and the ugly of data centers, and to empower them as well, take advantage of the ability to ask for things from these deep-pocketed investors, a community benefit and dividends agreement where it's not a one-off payment, but you can actually have concessions over time, like a long-term lease. There's also Science for Georgia has a good data center toolkit. There's a lot of really good toolkits to empower local leaders. And then, we can leave it to the systems planner folks like us to worry about the larger impacts on impacts to power bills and things of that nature, because there are benefits, as was mentioned by Celine, to these deep-pocketed folks. When you kind of have fixed costs and then you you have new customers coming in and pouring money into that kitty without necessarily building new infrastructure, you'll need some, but you can also use what you have more efficiently, and that can help to drive down prices for folks. That's when you do things intelligently in the right way, but they can also have other impacts that could raise your bill as well. So we just have to be very comprehensive and thoughtful about this. And that's what I think is important, is to empower local and state leaders to make the right choices.
Excellent. And being an academic, I can't help but cite Commissioner Hubbard for saying this. He, in our planning session, he said, we just want to help communities have no regret decisions.
We're bringing you a panel discussion on people, places, and power from Thrive Regional Partnerships, Yes and Spring Forum, on thoughtfully preparing communities for energy and AI, presented by the Lyndhurst Foundation at the Tennessee Aquarium here in Chattanooga. The participants: Dodd Galbraith of Lipscomb University in Nashville, Hunter Hydus of TVA, Lee Hopkins of the Center of Economic Development and Research at Georgia Tech, Peter Hubbard of the Georgia Public Service Commission, and Stacy Funderburk of the Conservation Fund.
All right, so let's get local, or get more local. Let's focus on the real-time opportunities and challenges that we're facing. Lee, Commissioner Hubbard gave you a great intro. In addition to your current role in workforce and professional education, you have extensive experience in planning, local land use planning. What are you hearing are some of the early themes in public hearings and city leader questions? What are the best practices? For example, do we need to revisit general plans and policy for energy? Do we need to talk about cross-jurisdictional issues like Celine brought up? And what about trade-offs?
Okay, so first, I think we have to remember that we still have power, and you do not have to give that power away to anybody. So you don't have to agree to the first thing that comes across your desk, right? So you can, as a community leader, you have the opportunity to push back, ask questions, and ask for what you want. You know, again, Celine had such a great presentation and lead out for this question. But the things that we hear from our community leaders is there's a lot of fear and apprehension. And one of the things that we're doing at Georgia Tech is we have a program that we're launching called Grid Ready Communities. And it essentially starts with listening. So, you know, the last thing a community wants to do is get knocked upside the head with a data center proposal that comes to their community and say, you know, we're going to put it here, and, you know, this is what you have to deal with. Well, you know, you don't want to back people into a corner. So ideally you would try to do this ahead of time, get ahead of the potential. If a data center could locate in your community, get ahead of it, start talking to your community, bring folks together to the table, and listen to their concerns. So our, you know, the first step in our Grid Ready program is listening. And then based on the concerns, you know, that a community has, if it's around water, noise, if it's around, you know, air pollution or other concerns, you know, we have experts, not just at Georgia Tech, but all around the state and in our region, who can speak to those concerns and, just provide answers. We're not taking a stance one way or another. We're just a neutral party. And then, like Commissioner Hubbard mentioned, we have a great resource called Epicenter, PICenter.org, I think, at Georgia Tech. And it is a huge resource for data center ordinances that your communities can start with. If you don't have a data center ordinance in place already, or if you're looking to start one, that's a great place to start. And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, a lot of the times data centers are going to bring resources, financial resources to a community. Well, how are communities going to plan for that? Have they thought about that? So we have a great fiscal modeling tool at Georgia Tech that we can help communities prioritize how they might plan those, to use those funds, should it locate there. So I think, it starts with listening and getting ahead of the curve.
Excellent. All right, let's kind of turn to the local impact of this energy demand. Hunter, we know Celine talked about 5,000 megawatt, 35,000 house equivalent. Someone in our planning discussions mentioned the possibility of 15,000 megawatts of initial demand. What does this mean? How can we better understand the magnitude of this? Are we talking about peak power or just base load or a combination? If you can explain that to everybody, and then we'll turn to both Peter and Stacy to see if they have any other analogies as well and stories and technical facts to share.
So I mentioned the forecasting challenge. So we have a process where we take inquiries from customers, and we've seen the data center component of that grow tremendously over the last 5 years. I think there were like 16 inquiries in 2020, and last year we had 65 inquiries from data centers. And these aren't small loads, so they're large loads. So Celine's point, I mean, it's we're no longer talking about the 50 megawatt data centers. We're talking about data centers that may be upwards of 1,000 megawatts or a gigawatt. So the challenge is not just the money that these companies have. I mean, they have lots of money. I think I saw that last year or this upcoming year, they're planning to spend like $700 billion in CapEx from like the big five data companies. So it's huge money. The issue is speed. And so when I think about if all of those inquiries were to materialize in the Tennessee Valley, 15,000 megawatts of capacity that they're asking for, I mean, that is, the thing about a peak load day for a winter or summer for TEA is somewhere 32 to 35,000 megawatts. So just put that in perspective, an additional 15,000 megawatts on top of that is a tremendous challenge to plan for that. And so we can't just build 15,000 megawatts of generating capacity overnight, right? That's going to take years and years to build out. If I were to go, you know, get in line for a turbine today, for a natural gas turbine, and have it in the ground, you're probably looking at 7 years to have it from the project inception to commercial operation. So if these companies want to come now, how do we deal with that growth? And so it's a combination of things. As I mentioned, they have money, so they're willing to bring on-site generation. XAI is a good example of that in Memphis. They brought gas turbines to power their data center there in the Memphis area on a temporary basis and then on a permanent basis. We have the ability to, through products and programs, to make those loads interruptible across peaks, try to help with reliability risk. But again, it's not just a near-term challenge, it's the long-term challenge of building. And building infrastructure, as we all know, is complicated in and of itself. I mean, you've got lots of NIMBY concerns. I've heard people talk about the banana, build nothing anywhere, something, I'll get it wrong, but yeah, absolutely nothing. So. Yes, thank you. So, you know, you have that sentiment as well, whether that's a transmission line, whether it's a gas pipeline, or an actual generator itself. So you've got these tensions on both sides, people wanting additional capacity and people not wanting that capacity in their backyard, and then also not wanting their rates to go up. And so I just think the planning dynamic of this is going to be a challenge. Again, I mentioned earlier, making sure that we are adding load to the system. We're supporting economic development in a responsible way. But I think the challenge is just going to be, how do we do that in a measured approach to be able to serve these loads, but also protect the ratepayers of the valley?
And one thing Hunter was telling me during Celine's conversation when she was talking about 24/7, 365 days, that's 75% base load. That means flat line, constant generation to meet that demand, and then 25% peak. So it's a lot of regular power, not just peak power. Okay, so Hunter and Stacy, what do you all see as the natural resource implications of this kind of booming demand, more specifically at the local level? What kind of advice do you have for these local leaders?
Well, I mean, one of the biggest challenges of our environment, especially in areas like this around growing metro areas, are fragmentation, right, of land. And so, I had someone mentioned earlier the Douglas County example in Georgia, and I actually had the chance in a flyover with the mayor of Atlanta and the DNR commissioner looking at some other conservation land to have someone in the helicopter who had worked on policy around that. And they pointed down and said, this is the county that said yes on day one with no limit. As many as you want, we'll take them. Sounds great. And then this is the county that said not so fast. And I don't know what it feels like at the ground level for those, but I'll tell you from the air, it was horrific for the one that put no checks or limits. It doesn't mean it's an either or a, you know, yes, no, but they had made changes to their community that could never be reversed, right? I mean, I think Celine talked about reuse. I spent a lot of time buying land in the city of Atlanta for parks and green space, and sometimes there are structures and you can reuse, but like the future of what you do on a data center site, I don't know what it would be, but you're not bringing it back. I mean, part of the problem with natural resources is a Humpty Dumpty, right? Like you're not going to put it back together again. And so I think in my mind, the place that you need to really think about is it doesn't mean you're saying no to data centers. It doesn't mean you're saying no to the transmission and other infrastructure that needs to get built. But you, the community, are telling people, you're telling your county commissioners and your mayors and others where you want it built in a way that is suitable, that protects all the amazing natural resources that you have. Policy should really ultimately just be a reflection of the priorities of the community. Doesn't always happen, but that is the dream. So I think weighing in on the front end on the regional implications for natural resources and letting that drive the decision making on the where. We can talk about also really good uses of funds that could supplement and benefit the dollars that we have in hand. But at this stage and the speed that things are moving, I would really be focused on dictating where.
Hunter, do you need to respond to any of that?
Yeah, I'll just add, I mean, what we've seen from data centers is they're doing a lot of homework on the front end, particularly related to sites. So thinking about where do I have access to transmission? Where do I have access to water? Where is there already power that's being delivered to a facility? So several data centers we have on the system today have located in, you know, warehouses where you had, you know, a manufacturing industrial customer that had, you know, gone under, and they come and take that shell of a building, add servers and racks. So it's a very different customer, but they're locating on what we would call brownfield sites. It's not, you know, a new project. The new projects happen as well, but we've seen more brownfield development, again, for speed to getting connected. Very different customer in terms of power usage at that facility from what it was before. Very different water usage as well. So I think that's an important factor to consider. It's not just the site, but how does the actual customer usage change because of the change in business?
Excellent. Let's turn back to Commissioner Hubbard and then Lee as well. How can communities have a seat at the table? You mentioned they come really prepared, Hunter. How can we use the tools that we've had, but how can we deal with some of the challenges that we're facing, like potentially unfunded mandates and social consequences, particularly short-term costs to ratepayers, and then long-term workforce displacement? That might not be a relevant issue today, but we hear it in the news a lot as well. So, Commissioner Hubbard.
Well, I can hearken back to my Peace Corps days when you go into a community and you ask them, what is it that you need in your community? And that's always got to be the starting point, I think, to empower local folks is, again, you can ask for concessions. You can ask for things in these companies that are coming and wanting to develop here. So I think that's always going to be a starting point. And certainly you can ask your local leaders and state leaders to really pay attention to these issues, and they're, you know, we're all grappling with them. There's the banana concept. There's also the Beyonce concept. Bring your own clean electricity. We've got to be a little bit creative about some of the things that we can do. Had to throw it out there after I heard banana. And we just passed something called a customer identified resource, where you can actually have multiple customers, small, large, identify a utility scale solar and battery site, for example, and bring that to the table and have that worked into the interconnection process. But the point is that you have power, you have agency to talk to your leaders and say, this is what we expect of you. And I think that's an important thing is that you have that power and you just have to exercise it and let your local and state leaders know that that you're deeply concerned about data centers and we need to have a holistic approach to how we treat them.
Lee, where's the quick leverage for local leaders?
So I would say, I agree with Commissioner Hubbard wholeheartedly. Communities definitely have more leverage than they think. They just have to start early. So if these data center companies are starting early, your community needs to be starting early as well. So, you know, thinking about, like, with our Grid Ready program, you know, we're trying to help communities think about how they want to prioritize themselves and, you know, shaping your community benefits agreements, shaping how you want to use funding. So really thinking about coming to the table early and talking with your regional planning associations or organizations like the Atlanta Regional Commission. So are your MPOs aware of the potential data centers that are going in your community? Are they reviewing those plans? You know, ARC is on top of it, but, you know, some of the other EDDs, the economic development districts around the country, are not as well resourced. So, you know, really talking with them and getting them on board and in your corner.
Great. So this is for Lee and Stacy. For our community leader at the very beginning of the learning curve, of course, if they're here today, they're off to a good start. Where would you suggest they begin? What kind of questions should they be asking? What do you want a community leader to know as they're first stepping into these conversations about your respective, about the tools that are available and the conservation impacts, as potential opportunities and impacts?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think one good thing is that, I mean, Georgia is, I think, second, you know, to Virginia in terms of the impacts that are happening from data center development. But I always like to cheat and learn from others, you know, who've already been in that space. So you already heard some good tools for people, how they're understanding the long-term impacts, what's happening with data centers and other places. So the first thing I did, you know, when we started having a conversation in a particular watershed about this was call my colleague in Virginia. So I think lean on, you know, what others have been doing in this space is a great starting point. It is also really important to connect with the people who are working on conservation initiatives in the region. And this relates to something that Lee was saying. We can't just complain about data center developments and not or claim that we want offsetting impacts and that we want the future revenue to go to protect land and other things if we don't come with big proposals. I mean, one of the things that I've seen that drives me insane are these opportunities where, you know, hyperscaler comes in and gives a small grant, you know, to a community project that doesn't really offset the impact to air, water, land, whatever's happening. Obviously, that also takes us, you know, asking for the larger thing, which also takes work. How do we, if we're going to roll up the impacts from data centers over the next 5 or 6 decades, we also have to roll up what we want and what we need on the natural resources side for the next 5 to 6 decades and ask for that now. Because I'll tell you, when people are moving with this kind of speed and this kind of money, when I'm on the other side of that table, it sounds like leverage to me. So we have to figure out what the roll-up needs are to protect a region like this over the long haul.
Excellent. Lee.
Yeah. So I think this starts with literacy and awareness. So we're currently wrapping up a program called Georgia AIM, the Artificial Intelligence and Manufacturing Program. It was a Build Back Better program funded through EDA in 2022. And at the time, data centers were, you know, starting to make themselves on the scene, but you know, folks weren't really using AI like ChatGPT. It just kind of gotten launched, and I mean, and now look at where we are. So we, how far we, or how fast and how furious things are coming at us in just a couple of years. And so one of the things that we did with Georgia AIM is we were working with local governments on helping them understand what the implications of AI could be for their manufacturing sector. Well, what we heard was there was a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of differences in the level of knowledge that local leaders had around AI. And that was, you know, just a year or two ago. And so what we did was we tried to help them understand the basics of AI. So we held these AI 101 for local government courses all over the state. We ran around, we had an AI mobile lab come around from one of our partners through Georgia AIM. We had folks interact with AR VR headsets and robot dogs and all kinds of fun stuff just to get them to understand, because they had no idea. So if you have no idea and your local leaders don't understand the first thing about AI, how are they going to react when a data center comes to their community and what questions to ask? So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I would say to, you know, just being prepared and building your literacy and awareness in your communities well beforehand.
That's great. You're telling them what they can benefit from. All right. So we're going to have some closing perspectives from each panelist. I'm going to ask them to kind of summarize from their perspective sort of the takeaway thoughts in about a minute each, if you don't mind. And then we're going to take some questions from the audience. I think we'll have enough time for that. And then we'll talk a little bit about hope as we close. So why don't we start with Stacy and just kind of work our way down.
Sure. Well, I'll just say, because we are here in this place, and I love this area. Actually, back in the day, in the early 2000s, I was a weekend warrior. I came up here to go climbing every weekend, like my colleague Zach there. I don't have time for that anymore. But it's an amazing, beautiful place. Your rivers, your mountains, your plateau. Like, this is a special place. It was formed over tens, hundreds of thousands of years, right? Like, how long did it take to get it to be this place that it is? Now, I asked ChatGPT this morning, and I thought it might lie to me or maybe sandbag. I mean, I guess in the future it will drive me the other direction. But what the total was, and it wasn't as scary as Hunter's, but it was $45 billion of projects approved and moving forward in the first 3 months of the year. We fought last year to get the state land conservation funding in Georgia bumped up finally again by 50% to $50 million a year, which feels like a miracle. I'm not saying that those are ever going to be perfectly in balance, but at a time like this, when things are moving this fast, you really have to push for protecting this place, ensuring that you get the resources to do it, and not being afraid to say no or yes, and you're going to do it where we say and in the way that we think will work and protect the special place that we love.
Lee.
Yeah, I would say, you know, there's a choice and the outcome is not inevitable. So, you know, plan for what you want. So plan for your rivers, plan for your plateaus and your beautiful spaces. I'll say that energy is an economic development strategy. So your relationships with your utility providers is going to enhance your economic development in your community. And I would say also the same for workforce development and really working with your industry. I didn't really talk about that earlier, but working directly with industry to understand what they need and, you know, having employer-led partnerships and workforce development will be key to how the workforce is changing. And then, you know, just the collaboration aspect. Get people around the same table, get your, you know, your industry, your energy providers, and your local governments and your stakeholders around the same table to dictate what you want early.
Yeah, so when I think about yes and, it makes me think about balance. And so, you know, we are all dealing with, you know, finite resources. So I think about generation capacity. You know, we can build more, but again, I talked about how long that takes to do that. Transmission capacity is the same way. The natural resources are finite, right? So if once you use them or you lose them. So you're not creating more of those. So when I think about this region and I think about the differences in each community, it's not a playbook that is going to work for each individual community. I think there are differences. And when I think about our local power companies that we serve and they serve customers, they're in very different places. So thinking about the growth that we've seen on the system kind of post-pandemic, it's affected communities differently. So some haven't seen growth, some have seen tremendous growth. So some are saying, I don't want a data center. Some are saying, I would love to have a data center. So thinking about the differences there in the community brings me back to balance. And I think the yes and piece of this is, yes, we can do this, but these are things that we're going to need to make that happen. And so I think being vocal about that up front, saying what it's going to take for you to bring that into your community is very impactful, and I think will ensure kind of the balance across the region.
These are great comments, and I'm really happy to to share the panel with all of you. And I think that this is happening fast and furiously, but it's a generational opportunity for us to take advantage of the fact that we have a grid that it took 100 years to build, and we're talking about expanding it by 50% in just the next 5 or 6 years in some cases. And so it's a chance for us to help in take and steer those dollars towards upgrading our infrastructure in an enduring way so that we don't fall into the trap of stranded assets and other things of that nature. So we really have to be thoughtful. That's why I'm out here talking, is because you all need this information to make informed decisions. There's lots of resources out there, and the people and the places here in this region are absolutely worth fighting for. As a hometown kid who grew up rafting on the Ocoee River, this place is very much worth fighting for. And we need to, this is why we're all here together, I think, is because it's important to us and we want to get it right. And we have the opportunity to do that. So thank you.
We do want to close with this. I just want to leave you with a little bit of perspective. You know, in times of challenge, we often turn to people who did a good job. If you look back in history, there's a couple of individuals that I often cite to my students or myself when I'm trying to sort through difficult decisions. And these two individuals both conveyed clarity about key moments that they faced. And they didn't really know each other that well. One was Abraham Lincoln, and the other was Ralph Waldo Emerson. You probably wonder, why in the world would they be relevant? Well, they were leaders who were in the hope business, who were in the business of communicating to the people they represent opportunities to do the right thing and good things that balance the mission of Thrive. And they were also destined. Emerson was speaking in Springfield, Illinois, and Lincoln happened to be there and hear him, and Emerson didn't know it. So when Emerson visited him in the White House, you know, they had a chance to kind of get acquainted. And the odd thing about their relationship was that Emerson had mentored a young man and helped him get his first contract doing the bronze statue of the Minuteman. And Daniel Chester French later designed Lincoln's, supervised the sculpture of the Lincoln Memorial, where you see Lincoln on the great chair. And this is what these two gentlemen said, I think adds clarity. This is Mr. Lincoln. The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. Our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew. Abraham Lincoln. And this is Emerson. This focuses on the preservation of what we love. Every spirit builds itself a house, and beyond its house, a world, and beyond its world, a heaven. Know then that the world exists for you. For you is the phenomenon perfect. What we are, that only we can see, build therefore your own world. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Our thanks to Thrive Regional Partnership, the Lyndhurst Foundation, and the panel participants for sharing this discussion with us so we could share it with you. For more on Thrive, visit thriveregionalpartnership.org. Catch all our conversations on scenic routes at our website, wutc.org, on the WUTC app, and wherever you get your podcasts.